I speak to you in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. You know, there's something magical contained within gentle and affectionate touch. From a newborn resting her head on her mother's or father's chest to elderly lovers who still take great delight in sharing sweet and sloppy kisses. Something magical, something beautiful happens. And here I'm talking about more than just biology. I'm talking about that deep existential level, that deep place within our heart. Call it the soul, call it the spirit, call it neurons firing off, call it whatever you want. But this magic happens on more than just a biological level. Our flesh may be touched by hands or lips, but within us, something else is touched. Within us, something stirs, something is moved. We are left with the sweetest wounds from which we will never recover. Nor, frankly, would we want to recover. Because when our bodies are touched by another, someone full of affection and care, when that happens, the goodness of our bodies is validated. And even more than just our bodies, our whole person is validated. In those moments of intimacy, whatever the variety, to be held and to be touched is to be reminded that we aren't pariahs, that we aren't outcasts, that we are valued and appreciated, that who we are, all of us, body and soul, we matter to someone. Even if it is just one other person, we matter. And my God, when that happens, it feels so good. And during supper, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going to God, got up from the table, took off his outer robe and tied a towel around himself. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was tied around him. I would have loved to have been there and to see the faces of those disciples, right? I wonder what they felt. Not Peter, right? We know what his response is. False humility, which was a big ego. We know how he responded. But the others, I wonder what they felt. When their Lord, their master, their Messiah knelt down, disrobed and engaged in this act of incredible, vulnerable intimacy. If you were here this past Sunday, I said that the story of the Passion is the story that the world needs right now. But this one, this is a close second. Frankly, I might even put it on equal footing. No pun intended. I'm a dad. I get to make dad jokes. But I mean it. I mean that this story really matters because in this story we see how one man, one wonderful, beautiful man, used his body not for violence or an exercise of his power, but for an act of pure self-giving. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. It was love that drove him to disrobe. It was love that drove him to fill that basin. And it was love that drove him to tenderly and sweetly and lovingly cleanse the feet of his friends. And this cleansing, this touch of affirmation and validation, this act of unbridled intimacy, is an example for us. I mean, the scriptures say that as much. But not for a moment do I believe it was just an example or merely a performance for Jesus. I believe that it was overflowing with the same love and tenderness with which he embraced the lepers and the demoniacs, the fearless abandon with which he approached the dead, which would have made him unclean, that spirit of inclusion that drove him to drink water with a Samaritan woman. This was a man whose tenderness told us, in fact, still tells us, that our bodies and that, therefore, our whole selves are good and beautiful, and they matter to God. And he wielded his body without any hint of carnivorous lust or conquering power. He was, in the words of John A.T. Robinson, the man for others, the one in whom love has completely taken over. And this man for others, the one in whom love has completely taken over, he is the one we need today, the one whose vulnerability is threatening to us, not because it threatens to consume us, but because it threatens to open us up to such radical self-giving, such outwardly focused love. So I contend that Jesus was and remains perhaps history's truest and best lover, because his love sought nothing in return. It sought only the lifting up and the validation and the elevation of those whom he encountered. But this example comes with a command. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. There it is, friends, the medicine that could cure the world. It all begins with love. Love may not be all we need, but it's certainly what we need the most of. I think if we as the church gave ourselves over to this story as much as we give ourselves over to the story of his death and resurrection, if we follow the example and lead of Jesus, the man for others, and we engage in this kind of vulnerable and sensual and affectionate love and engagement with the world and the community around us, I really don't think the world would know what to do with us. I really don't. I mean, that kind of love is healing. It's restorative. It points to something bigger than the pain and the despair of the world. It points to the way in which receiving love opens us up of becoming the beloved of Christ, and it transforms us into the lovers of the world. Lovers of the ones who need to know that they aren't outcasts or pariahs, just as those disciples needed to know that tender affection of Jesus. I was 13 years old, and I was at the Crossroads Winter Conference in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. I went for one purpose with my youth group, and that was to see the band Disciple, a Christian heavy metal band. Go figure. I was in the fourth row and was loving it, right? I loved that band, and there they were, and it was the first time I'd seen this band, and I was into it. You know, it was like an epiphany for me to see this kind of music played, and then I felt the tap on my shoulder. It was my youth pastor, Joe Tanner. I've mentioned him before. Although he and I are sort of diametrically opposed theologically, he's still one of my mentors, because I really learned what it meant to be a pastor from him. And he was still fairly new in our community. He tapped me on my shoulder and he said, "Hey, everyone from Inglewood's meeting in conference room B in 10 minutes. No, sir. No, sir. And I told him as much and more. I was rude. I was mean to him. "Joe, you know that I want to see this band. You know, I'm a 13-year-old. And he said, "That's fine. You can be upset. Conference room B or whatever it was in 10 minutes. I probably stayed 15 and made my way in. And when I got in, there was a circle in the room, chairs and a basin and some towels. And I was like, "What in the world is this?" And then I saw he was washing everyone's feet in the room. And when he got to me, it was too much for me to bear. And I broke. 13-year-old, tough guy, crying. And I just said to him, "Joe, I'm sorry." And he said, "I love you. It's okay." That was my first experience of having my feet washed. It's probably why I love it so much, because it came in this encounter where he had every right to tell me everything I had done wrong. And he chose to tell me that he loved me. And that's how Jesus was with the disciples. He knew that Judas was going to betray him. You notice the story doesn't say he skipped Jesus, Judas's feet. Judas wasn't gone at this point. He washed his feet anyway. He knew about Peter and his wishy-washy self. He knew all of this and he loved them anyway. You know, that's how we're called to love the world. It's how we're called to love each other and then to love the world. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. So I ask, will you do this, church? Will you love the world the way Jesus loved the disciples?